Everybody likes guns, they just don't know it. Deep inside of his soul, there's a cowboy trying to get out.
Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Hello and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 161. I'm one of your hosts, Mike, and tonight with me I have Benny.
Hello.
And Thomas.
Hello.
So Benny, what did you get up to this week?
Well, as much as everyone knew, I had plans to go to the range. It didn't work out, and instead I bought a security cabinet, a 14-gun security cabinet, and hopefully now things will get a little more organized and put away properly, so, yeah.
So you have room for another 12 guns then?
Well, I don't know. Apparently you have to like take that number 14 and then divide it by 3, and then you're closer to what you actually can fit. That's what they tell me. I don't know. I want to bolt it to the wall first before I start filling it in.
Just before you do that, though, I know my cabinet that I got, the, what do you call it? Like the little, the rest, I guess you'd call it, where you put your rifles up again. You have to screw that in from the back.
Ah, right. Good idea.
So just check that before you screw it into the wall and then find out you have to take it out from the wall to put those screws in.
Thank you for that, Mike. Yeah. I will make a note of that.
And the 14 doesn't include scopes. As soon as you have an optic on it, you're squished. Does it have a middle shelf?
It has. Excuse me. What do you mean middle shelf? Like it does have something that's supposed to be there for scopes, but I it's just a bag of black plastic right now. I haven't opened it up or looked at it yet. So,
is it a stack on?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I have one similar to that. Yeah, and you put these little the holders on, which are for like normal, and then it will come with, I don't know, 4 or 6 extended ones for your scopes.
Uh-huh.
And actually I found it actually worked out relatively well. Like it's a very basic design, but it works.
Okay.
But yeah, you're definitely not gonna fit 14 in there. Not unless you're fitting 14 single shot 12 gauges. Like But the good news is it doesn't take into account how many handguns you can fit inside one of those safes or cabinets. So you can always cram a lot of those in there.
Yeah, I don't know why. I always just I store my restricteds in like a locked box in a safe. So I don't have a lot of room in my safe. That's why I got this cabinet.
Okay.
Yep.
Makes sense. Any other Black Friday shopping?
No. I kept looking at things and being like, I can't afford this on the Black Friday price. How can I afford it on the regular price? So yeah.
Yeah. So Thomas, what did you get up to?
I did some Black Friday shopping. Actually, I ordered my Christmas present. I bought a gun. It's only the second gun I bought this year. So that's not too bad. I'm doing good this year. I bought a Hatson MPATS. I know it's Turkish, but Hatson's been around.
Didn't you do like a whole show where all you did was rant on Turkish shotguns?
Depends on the company because there's a lot of fly-by-night companies out there. But Hatson's been around for about 30 years, and it's a really big company in Europe. They've got over 650 employees, so it's not really a fly-by-night Turkish brand like some of the stuff that's imported by Trigger Wholesale. Bell Outdoors is actually the distributor for both parts and accessories. And actually, they're really big in England. I did a lot of research on them. A friend of mine's actually had the same gun, and he's been running an IPSC for 4 years now, and he hasn't any problems with it. And there are accessories available. There's a place in the U.S. called Kings. They make the extended safeties, the charging handles, and side saddles. They listed a couple of affiliate companies, one of them being One Shot Tactical. Unfortunately, they shut down in July, so I'm gonna have to start looking for something else. What else is doing? I've been doing some work on my 22-45. I've been trying to get a hold of this guy named Dominic that made my 22-45 grips. He lives down in Florida, but he doesn't seem to be answering my emails. And I've got one of the 22-45s now come with removable grips. Before they didn't. You had to what people would do is actually grind off their grips, and I didn't want to do that. So I found this guy that actually made the grips actually go over the existing integrated grips, and there's on the side paddles, there's a little line that goes around, like a little template thing. And these ones that I got from Dominic are perfect. They fit right in and they lock, and they're really easy to put on. Like, you put them on each side, put a rubber band around it, and it comes with the pre-pilot holes and the bits and the bushings and everything. And I just wanted to, maybe get a different grip color, because I've got the white ones. And I've been talking to listener Robert quite a bit. And that's what he did. He grinded down his integrated grips, and then he had to file the whole side of the grip down. So you're stuck. So he can change any other grip. But we both have the same non-replaceable grip frame. So we've done a lot of the same modifications to our guns. And he messages me frequently about grand powers and 22-45. So it's nice to hear from our listeners. I actually included a picture in the show note of what he did to his side panels to kind of describe what I'm talking about. And he also he bought a mag funnel for his 22-45. I've never seen one for a 22-45. So I'm trying to get a hold of Dominic. And so far, he hasn't answered my emails. And Robert said he's messaged him. He hasn't answered his emails either. So maybe he's not in business anymore. So I was thinking maybe I'll get someone to take my grips off. Maybe get somebody to do a 3D printed image for me if I don't hear from him. The problem is he might have a copyright on the grips. And they are kind of unique to him. So I guess as long as I don't sell any, it's just a thought. But it's just a last resort. If I can't get hold of the guy, I may want to have some grips made. What else? Listener Aaron's been messaging me too. He's been keeping me updated on his AR build. I did like the mil-spec trigger that came with it. So he actually went out shopping on Black Friday specials. And he got a trigger kit from Arms East. And George, he's just about done. And see what else. Back in September, I had a listener, Jeff, message me. He has shot the XKEL every time he went up to the Target Sports, and he couldn't stop himself from renting it every time he went there. So he's been saving for one. But then he got hit with the Black Friday bug as well, too. He saw that FOC had a 15% off sale. So SFRC had the sale, and he's close to FOC. So he went over to FOC and he asked them if they would match SFRC's price on a K100. And they did, of course. So he's really, really happy. So he saved a chunk of change. He's asking about holsters for K100. So I suggested Blade-Tec and Red Hill Tactical. And Red Hill Tactical actually has a 15% Black Friday special on right now for all this stuff. And if he misses that, I told him about our 10% discount code for Red Hill Tactical. And he also asked me about fiber optic sights and extra mags. Normally, FOC has them in stock, but the Grand Power order has been waiting to clear customs since November 17th. And you know what they charge a day to hold something in customs? 70 cents per kilo per day. It's costing Dave $65 a day since the 17th just to have the order there, because they've only got one person clearing the custom stuff, and there's 20 gun orders in the queue right now. And I think what's that other big, who does the Canucks,
Odell
has a massive order there, massive, and he's been waiting about the same amount of time. Could you imagine what his storage fees? But they've only got one person clearing the stuff, and they're charging like 70 cents per kilo per day when it's their fault that it's sitting there so long. So
yeah, that seems very not cool.
No,
that's
not
a
at
highway
all.
Robbery.
And then you have to pay the tax on those, and then when you sell them to the retailer, you have to charge them the tax, and then then for your taxes you have to submit your what you paid and get it taken off. So all the way down to whoever handles it gets taxed. Then they rebate the tax. And then finally the consumer gets the last tax. It doesn't get a chance to rebate it. So it's a lot of headaches. I don't know if I'd want to actually be a distributor or get involved with bringing stuff from the country. It's a lot of work. Oh, what else? Oh, Joe D asked on our contest if the Fury Grip was available in red. So I tagged Anika and she said no, but it's available, not anodized, just plain aluminum if somebody wanted to Cerakote or paint the grip. So she'll be updating them out of her arms online store to indicate that option. So sweet. If you don't like black and you want to get something, either the Fury grip or the bigger grip, Cerakote, whatever color you want, you can get it plain. So that'll save you a lot of money if you have to actually have it Cerakote, because they don't have to remove the original finish, which is pretty cool. What about you, Mike? Have you done anything?
Yeah, I've done actually quite a decent amount for me. I was messaging back and forth with Matt from Geek Gadgets and Guns. Give him a listen if you haven't yet. He was arguing in favor of the 3.5 Kream War. Because he actually has it. Pardon me?
6.5? You said 3.5.
Oh, yeah, 6.5. Okay. Sorry.
Just making sure, because, you know, there are things I don't know about.
Yeah. No, 6.5. I just can't read.
Okay.
But to get it in a semi version, which is kind of what I was hoping to get this larger caliber rifle in, it would either be a restricted AR-10 or I'd have to rebarrel an M305, which would cost me more than the M305 would cost. So I think I'm going to, because of that, because of the lack of semi-automatic options. Actually, I did see, who is it, the Alberta Tactical Rifle System.
Yeah. Oh, that one that has the non-restricted AR
type build? Yeah, they have theirs out, and they actually offer it, I think, in 6.5 for, you know, $3,500. Yeah. Once again, it would be... Yeah.
But you just want it for deer hunting, right?
Deer hunting, fun, that kind of category.
Well, you just get a bolt action.
Because I want it to be in semi.
Okay.
Because bolt actions are boring. And if the zombie apocalypse starts and I need to be able to knock down zombies from, you know, a few hundred yards away, you know, I can't be wasting time racking that bolt.
Yeah, I need to get myself a full power.
If it comes, and just pull out your AR.
Sorry, say it again.
Sorry, I need to get... Thomas's point was you need to get... Just pull out your AR at that point. I agree with him. My Tavor is going to get a lot of use in that situation, but I still need to get myself a full-powered bolt action with a nice size scope on top. But I guess I got a couple of years before I catch up to Thomas here. So,
yeah,
just a couple of years.
Anyways, I made the video comparing revolver and semi-automatic reloads. Revolver reloads are slower by a whole second, so.
Yeah, that's what Bald and Curious said on his, and you know, he competes also, and his time was still a second behind.
Yeah. My revolver needs a real good cleaning. When I was playing around with it, I had a heck of a time trying to get all the cases to fall free out of the cylinder. It's just all dirty. Meanwhile, the semi, when I was doing their reloads, it's easy to set it up and run it. So, yep, that went relatively well. Clearly, I have a face for radio, so. outside of that, I set up and ran my first match. We ran a shotgun pistol match. It went relatively well. It was wet and muddy and cold, so for all the people who stuck it out, thank you. And, I'm learning how much I really despise people who do not help at matches. Like, I understand that some people have a bum knee and they can't carry, like, target stands and stuff around, but cardboard is light. Do something to help. But before I go off on too much of a tangent, then my Black Friday purchase was I bought a shot shell carrier from Double Tap Sports. I bought the Ghost Shot Shell Holder Pro 8. So before I only had a way to carry 4 extra shot shells, now I'll have a way to carry an extra 8 on top of that. So hopefully that'll get me through more matches.
Now, do they stack one on top of each other, or horizontally or vertically?
Both. They do two. They're two deep, I guess you could say.
Okay, so you grab two with one hand and just put two in at a time.
Yeah, you can grab two or four at a time with one hand. So you can either do the dual load or quad load. They're adjustable. So
cool.
So I'll play with that when I get that. And, I should say, I should really have cleaned my shotgun before I went to the match. I made it through 4 out of 5 stages, no problem. Last stage, you could pretty much watch the bolt go forward. It was just slugging along so slow. My semi-shotgun pretty much turned into a bolt action every time I had to reach up and grab it and rack it.
That was your Versamax?
That was the Versamax, yeah. But I was shooting it, and guy came up and it's like, oh, like, you know, yeah, you got to clean that or something. I'm like, well, this is technically only, I think, the third time I've shot my shotgun, this shotgun. So I'm not that concerned right now. It probably needed a good cleaning.
Now, when you got it new, did you take it apart and give it a thorough cleaning?
No.
You realize that
I rarely do. Unless I get like a surplus gun that I know is going to be where they like take it and like just dip it into cosmoline. Like, unless they're doing something like that, I normally don't bother doing an immediate complete strip and clean.
You have to with a semi-shotgun because they pack the preservative on the tube and the gas system. It's just, it probably just gelled right up because it had the original preservative on it.
Oh, well, I'll take it apart over the winter at some point in time. We'll see how that goes.
It's probably pretty sticky. That was the big. Okay. That was a big thing when I was actually looking at the reviews of this Hatson shotgun. People were complaining about it not firing bird shots, and you know what these people were doing. They're taking it right out of the box, and they're firing it with light loads. Well, they never took the preservatives off.
Yeah.
As soon as they cleaned it ran fine.
Yeah. In fairness, I pulled this shotgun out, and I think out of the first box of 25, I've only ever shot bird shot through it. And the first 25, I think I had two that kind of had a malfunction of some type. And then after that, it ran fine for like, I don't know, 200 more bird shots after that.
A nice warm summer day, though, right?
No, I remember I went shooting one time. I remember I was shooting with ice cleats on. So I'm going to guess it was cold out.
Oh, you're lucky it ran.
Yeah, well, it did. So either way, yeah, so it just needs a good cleaning. So we'll get to that sometime over the winter when I have time to take it all apart. Anyways, moving on to guns in the news. Thomas, why don't you take story number one?
Story number one is from the Philly News. Remington Outdoors, the second largest U.S. gun maker, has suffered a rapid and sharp deterioration in sales and similar drops in profits since last January and faces continued softness in consumer demand for firearms. Credit analysis at Standard and Poor's Global Ratings said in a report on Friday. S&P, as a result, has cut the company's corporate credit rating already at a junk bond level, which is low, which is a CCCC+. They knocked it down 2 full notches to a CCC-, a move likely to make the company high yield debt less attractive to investors and lenders, and force Remington to pay more interest instead. The company could face a change in control, bankruptcy, or default on its debt by next year. A backlog of unsold and unwanted firearms will force Remington to operate at a loss and pressure the company's sales profitability to at least early into 2018, resulting in insufficient cash flow for debt service and fixed charges unless Remington gives up cash to pay its ongoing operation, they said. S&P expects a heightened risk of restructuring of Remington's $575 million senior secured loan and assets-based lending facility, which it's supposed to pay by 2019. That's a big debt by 2019. If Remington defaults on its payment based on the company's current value, S&P expects the first lien creditors will receive about 35 cents on every dollar that they have lent or invested. Lower rated creditors will get back less or nothing. Default is not yet a virtual certainty, the report said. With that said, according to the FBI, over 200,000 background checks were requested with the Black Friday sales yesterday, making a new single day record in the U.S. history of background checks and sales that's been set in one day. Remington was offering a $100 discount on rifles and $200 discounts on shotguns on Black Friday. So their poor products and consumer letdowns is really starting to affect their bottom dollar, not to mention their anticipated election sales that never happened. So things do not look good for Remington.
Nope. I'll take story two. And in the U.S., the liberal terrorist organization Antifa's planned week of violence beginning last Saturday, thus far, it has been a rousing success. in that they have managed to beat up an old lady and get themselves killed. Three masked members of Antifa chanted "impeach, impeach, impeach" as they cornered a man wearing a red "Make America Great Again" hat at Smart Cart, a shopping center in Bourbon, South Carolina. According to local news broadcaster at WQER, the men were armed with knives, crowbars, and were about to attack the 76-year-old Marvin Hewlett when their intended victim surprised them. Hewlett, a retired Army sharpshooter, was able to draw his Colt 45 just in time to fire a round into each of the assailants' chests. All three attackers died. Police arrived minutes after his heroic act of self-defense, but after learning what had happened, they declined to press charges.
Way to go, Marvin.
Loss of human life.
Colt 45.
Yeah. Loss of human life is never funny, but it was just, yeah.
They picked on the wrong old man.
Yep.
All right, and story three is from the CCFR. Update on the 80% lower receiver prohibition. Still digging around with ATIPs on this. See the RCMP ATIP below, which we have a link in the show notes, which is what has brought them to the point where they prohibited them. Of the thousands of lowers that were imported into Canada, only 33 homemade AR-15s were ever completed and registered. This brought on the assumption that people were doing something other than making ARs with them.
That is such a bad... No, I don't... That's... No. No.
So pretty much because we don't know what you're doing with it, we must ban it.
Yes. Yes.
That's not even like some people are doing something bad with something that other people are doing nothing with. Let's ban it. That's, we don't know what you're doing with it, so you don't need it.
Yeah, that's so much. Like, I happen to know that, like, I knew someone. I don't know if they have anymore. I knew someone who had one, and it was like, I got it. I don't need to make one now. It's if I ever want to make one in the future, I it was a cheap, good deal. I'll pick it up and I'll build it in 5-10 years. Like, no.
Yeah, not everyone has access to the kind of machinery that's required to do a good job at it. So I'm sure there's a lot of people who picked one up on sale and just figured, well, one day when either I make a friend that has a good milling machine or, I don't know, decide that they're going to buy their own.
You just need a drill press.
And, I don't remember any crimes being committed with AR-15s the last couple of years.
No. Just you can do it with a drill press, but I feel like if you want to do a good job, I think you need a mill.
Yeah, the mill will make it a lot easier.
Yeah.
But no, just because people have been lazy, that it boils down to this. 33 people made homemade ARs, registered them with the government, and so they're like, wait a second, what about the thousands that we brought in? Like, I don't know about you guys, but I have at least two or three projects sitting around my house that are like, yeah, I'm gonna build that shoe rack eventually.
Two or three.
Nah.
I have like two or three pages of jobs that need to be done.
Well, you know, the snowflake saw this and they started to melt, and that's why these blocks of aluminum are now prohibited. You know what? I forgot to renew my CCFR membership too.
I got an email from them, and I just go to the sportsman show. That's my reminder to sign up for the CCFR.
Yeah, that used to be mine too, and then we stopped going.
To the Toronto Sportsman Show?
Yeah.
Oh, you came all the way to Toronto?
Sarah and I used to make that trek like every year, and then I think two or three years ago we were kind of there and we're like nothing here is different than before, and both of our interests, like, we're still into like camping and stuff, but our interest had shifted a lot more into like action shooting.
Yeah.
And when you go and all there is like hunting and stuff, you're like, there's nothing really here for me to drive 4 hours to go see.
Yeah, it's definitely not worth it for you. Like, I only go because it's like, it's a meetup kind of thing. Thomas didn't go last year. I was the only one who went last year. Thomas didn't go last year. Yeah.
No. Yeah. Well, because of that, there was no restricted. It was all hunting. Ipsic had a booth when we were there. Like, Kelly, George, and I went. And I think the only thing we actually bought was George Sr. bought some solar panels. The CCFR was there, and they had a couple of giveaways. But there was really not a lot there for me. And it was actually more fishing than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. If I was in the GTA, I would consider going just as something to do for a weekend, for a day. But for me now, 4-hour trip,
Yeah, no.
When I was a kid, we used to go down there because you used to get great deals. You get really super cheap deals on tackle boxes and fishing rods. And I used to go down with my stepfather. We leave there with guns. Well, nowadays they charge the vendors so much money for the square footage. You know, they have to, you know, turn a profit, or there's no point in going there.
Yeah, they can't give you a deal.
They can't give you a deal because it's costing them so much money. And there was years, like, I can remember when Gannings used to be there, all the local gun shops used to be there. You don't see them there anymore because it's not worth it to shut down, take half their staff, travel halfway across the city to make the same amount of money they would make if they just stayed at home. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what's new in the industry? So, how do you say this? McCrabby? Sure.
Yeah, McCrabby. Let's go that way.
McCrabby Defense, Dripped, Uppered, and Lowered are on pre-order now. So these are supposedly, they look kind of like an AR-15, and supposedly they take all or almost all the AR-15 part, but they are classified as non-restricted. So
there's no R.
I looked at.
Sorry.
Oh, there's no R.
There's no R. It's McCrabby.
McCrabby. Okay, I put an extra R in
it's
there.
It's coming to Hanukkah, so I guess that makes sense.
Well, you remember the intro on the show that we're not responsible for the guest word pronunciations, I believe Sarah says.
Yeah, I think that's spelling, I guess.
Or spelling.
Case. Yeah, no, I was thinking, like, I'm pretty sure there's no R in there. It's McCrabby. Yeah.
Yeah, and the worst part of it is right above it in the link.
Yeah, so it's the McCrabby, yeah.
Yeah, great. Yeah. It wasn't me. Usually it's me that screws up. It's nice Mike screwed up for a change.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, so I was looking at this because I saw this and I was thinking, oh, maybe I should build a 6.5 Creedmoor, kind of like an AR-10 knockoff with this, except for the upper and the lower themselves cost $1,000, or at least that's what they're looking at coming in at. So when that's how much you have to pay for your upper and lower and I haven't bought any other parts, I think I'll stick with my M14 308 for now. And I say M14, but I really mean M305 because I'm not buying an M14.
Why aren't you sticking with the 308 again?
Pardon me?
Why aren't you sticking with the 308 again?
Why am I?
Not.
No, I am.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to.
Okay, okay.
I am going to, yeah. Because of the fact that there's what I would consider a lack of availability for it in a semi-automatic platform.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Sorry, Thomas, you were going to say something?
I say, you know, you can get a Savage Axis and 6.5 Creedmoor for probably about $400, Mike. Then you wouldn't have to think of the money you'd have saved over for optics to make that 500-yard shot.
I know, but see,
it only takes one bullet.
In my old age, I've gotten to the point where I'd rather buy what I want once instead of buying something that's kind of a half of what I want and then trying to make it work. I'd rather just buy what I want now and then not regret it later. Buy once, cry once kind of thing.
You know what? That's not a bad way to look at it because I think we've all done that. Or I have. I've bought stuff. I regret it for not spending the extra money.
Yeah. And I seem to be incapable of selling a gun. So if I bought a bolt action, I'd end up holding on to it for the rest of my life, whether I ever shot it again or not. So
who cares if it only cost you $400?
That's still $400 I could put towards something else.
See, I don't live with those regrets because I only buy what I can afford. And
if it's not made in Israel, he doesn't buy it. So his selection is limited.
Yeah. No, I don't save for if it's not made in Israel. So that Dylan, yeah. That I never did end up getting that Dylan. So yeah.
All right. Well, tonight's main topic, everyday carry flashlight, or any flashlight really for that matter. So I'm just going to talk about some options of things that you might want to consider when selecting a good flashlight. Not all flashlights are the same, and not all flashlights are good for the same job. So some considerations are your light output, your battery type, your runtime, variable output, size, weight, clip, button position, your durability, your beam distance, and other things like how physically strong it is. So some of these things,
and how much money it costs.
Well,
They can get really pricey.
We just talked about buying. We just finished talking about buying what you want instead of cheaping out. So money's not an issue here.
Yeah. Oh, so this is another fantasy episode where whatever I want necessarily can afford.
Well, no. You just got to find the right brand from the right vendor, and you'll be good. You don't have to. Flashlights aren't as expensive as they used to be. I just listened to a whole. I think it was Safety Solution Podcast, I think, did a whole episode on lights. Yeah, that was Modern Self-Protection, I don't remember. So they both get a shout-out this week.
So how do we start with light output, Mike?
So, yeah, so some of these, there is actually a standard set for, a standard test for these, but the test is voluntary, so not all light companies follow it. So for your light output, light output is a measurement of luminous flux using an integrating sphere. The unit of luminous flux, lumen, is a measurement of energy. So it is a measurement of intensity of light coming out of the flashlight. This is usually taken on the highest brightness setting with new batteries. Some companies will show you multiple outputs, which could be different settings as the light has... Or different things that the light has.
Now, from what I remember, one lumen equals the light from one candle.
No.
Yeah. That's a candlelight.
That's candle. That's the other one.
Oh, yeah. That's the other meaning. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I know. There's two of them.
Yeah. So it's a good starting point, but it does not really give you an idea of how far light will shine. So just to give you some ideas of what lumens would be good for what purpose. So 10 to 20 lumens is good for close range tasks such as finding keys in your bag, finding the keyhole in the front door. The beam distance is usually no more than 100 meters. 20 to 150 lumen, beam distance around 120 meters. And it's great for around the house, dog walking, that kind of thing. 160 to 200. These torches throw a beam around 250 meters and are great for general purpose, walking, hiking, camping, around the house, tactical work, and personal security. 200 to 500 lumens are purpose made for tactical or hunting. They could be also for work, climbing, hiking, various work uses, fishing, or sailing. And 600 to 1,000 lumens, this is where it gets fun. You get beam distances of over 300 meters. In some models, which is great for camping, hiking, hunting, caving, fishing, or industrial uses. And then 1,000 plus lumens is not for around the house or built up areas. These are serious outdoor torches, fantastic for search and rescue, hunting, work, or recreation on large properties.
Now, those are the ones that get really hot.
I think those are the ones that you get that are, they pretty much have like a pistol grip on them, and they're a giant, like, they look like a coffee can mounted on top of a pistol grip.
So, those, yes. Things. Thomas, Safety Solution Academy podcast, episode 435, Bright Lights for Personal Defense. It was actually a very informative episode.
Okay.
Much like this one's about to be. Go for it, Mike.
Thanks for putting the pressure on, Benny. I don't do this to you.
See, I got my nag light in my hand, and I'm rooting for you, Mike.
That's because I picked the low-hanging fruit. You put some substance. You put some substance in your episodes.
Yep. So another big consideration is going to be your beam distance. So beam distance is a measurement in meters. This is how far the light will shine before the brightness diminishes to the equivalent of the light from a full moon on a clear night. So a full moon on a clear night is a little under 13 lumens. So when it says that it can shine, you know, 300 meters away, it means that 300 meter point, you're really not getting that much light anymore. But it's a good reference at least. And then runtime is defined as the amount of time rounded to the nearest quarter hour until output drops below 10%. This gives you an idea of how fast the battery is draining, but not necessarily when it will stop working. This can be affected greatly by the battery the flashlight is using. Higher voltage means brighter for longer, but usually also comes at a price of size and weight. And since we're talking about batteries, there's also disposable versus rechargeable. So disposables, nice thing are, they're generally your AA, AAA, or C or D cell batteries. Nice thing about them is that you can pick them up at most convenience stores. So if it dies while you're out, you can buy some more. The other option is rechargeable. So some batteries like I think mine's a CR123, something like, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's actually a rechargeable one, so I can actually plug it into a USB port and charge it up. It's a cool feature, but it doesn't do you any good when you're in the woods and your battery's dead. And because it's not a disposable one, you probably only brought the one, so it's always good to bring a backup battery anyways.
Yeah, I have some in my my rifle case for my EOTech.
Yeah. Well, that's something I forgot to talk about completely. My battery died again in my Vortex sight for my pistol. And this one died after about 3 days after I changed it. So I think there's something wrong with it. So I got to send it into Vortex.
Woohoo! What size battery?
16 something. I can't remember. 1632 maybe.
Well, I would say that it shouldn't be. Don't they have an automatic shutoff too?
You got to turn it on first.
Here's the thing. The one that I have, there's two modes. There's either on, where you can like manually adjust the setting, but it won't automatically shut off, or you can do an auto brightness, so it will automatically go brighter or darker depending on the room you're in. And in that mode, it will shut off after 14 hours. So I figured out that based on their thing, they said on maximum brightness, it will last 150 hours. So even if I left it on by accident on maximum brightness, it should last a little over 6 days. But it's not even lasting 3 when I turned it off. So
yeah, Filthy and I both have those Bushnell made EOTechs, and they take the N cell, two N cells, like $20 for battery, and we've got to take them out. You cannot store, even if you turn it off, it will drain the battery.
Yeah.
So when we're finished shooting, you got to take them out, or it'll be dead next time you go to use it.
Mike, send it into Vortex. They'll help you out. They have a great reputation.
Well, that's what I figure. I'll send them a message this weekend and see what they can do for me. Because this is, I think, the fifth battery I've been on, and I only really started playing with it like a couple weeks ago. So,
now is that a slide mounted light or?
Yeah. This is for my Q5.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, back to the show. So another item that could be a consideration is the bulb type. So flashlights come with several kinds of bulbs these days. The biggest difference are the amount of brightness, longevity of the bulb, and the cost. Here's a quick rundown. Incandescents are Streamlight uses premium gas-filled lamps for high performance. Both Exxon and halogen lamps provide high output for their size and a white, natural-appearing light. Halogen lamps blacken less as they age and may have longer life than Exxon. Am I saying that right?
I think it's Xeon, isn't it?
Xeon?
It might be. I wouldn't know. I'm not a chemist.
Okay. Both require periodic replacement and can fail on extreme impact. They're easily focused, most powerful, highest performance, top choice for long distances.
And expensive.
Yeah. LED is a solid-state construction, a high-intensity solid-state bulb which lasts up to 100,000 hours, do not require periodic replacement, able to run for very long periods of time on very little power, available in various colors including ultraviolet. C4 LED. We pair LEDs with a Streamlight engineered reflector and other technology to increase the brightness and create an intense beam of light that pierces the darkness. And combination C4 LED combine the brightness of Streamlight C4 LEDs with the long running times and less intense beams of the regular LEDs. So just some consideration of what your purpose is.
That last option reminded me of the Black Diamond headlamp I bought before I went, or when I was in the army. And it's just funny because I remember going to the store to look at them in Israel, and the guy just kept t- turning the flashlight on and shining into my eyes to say, hey, look how bright it is. I'm like, oh, thanks. And like, I walk out the store and I just got those black.
You know, you see those purple dots, circles, yeah, and
going off. And I'm like, that's oh.
Terrible salesman.
Well, he made the sale.
I find the straight LED, yeah, the straight LEDs, they're not very bright. Like, you can get these ones at the dollar store with, they'll have like 6 or 8 LEDs in it, and it's still not sufficient for trying to find the dog poop at night.
If you can't see it, yeah, no one else can, so you're okay.
Yeah, but if I can't see it, I might step in somebody else's, so.
Yeah.
New Shooter Canada does not condone leaving your dog droppings out unattended.
Well, no, I carry a 300 aluminum flashlight with me when I walk the dog, especially this time of year, with all the leaves and the grass. If he does his business, I can't see it. I need bright light, so I have a 300 lumen dog walking light. Actually, I have 3 of them.
Yeah.
Actually, I tried to buy some. We went to Costco on Monday, and they don't have any of the decent flashlights left. I was going to buy another.
Oh, no?
You can usually get a 3. They had a... It was a 4-pack. Now it's a 3-pack of the Duracell 300 aluminums, and it comes with batteries for $20 for 3 of them.
Okay.
I figured they make
good. That sounds like a good deal.
Yeah, I figured they'd be a great Christmas present, but they didn't have any. Everybody.
Maybe it's just your Costco.
Everybody needs a flashlight for Hanukkah, right, Benny?
No, we use real fire. We're none of this.
Yeah, they got candles.
Yeah.
338 lapel brass candles, I believe.
Hopefully.
So another consideration could be your variable output. So this is, some flashlights have it so that you can turn them on, then you press the button again and you'll flip through your settings. So that can be nice if you have one flashlight that you're trying to do multiple jobs with, right? So you don't need it at the full 500 lumen, you know, blinding everyone around you when you're just trying to, you know, read a piece of paper or look for something on the ground. But it's nice to have that option to be able to switch through it so that if you ever are in a very dark situation and you need to light up the whole place, you can change your output while still just only having to carry one flashlight.
It's nice to have, too.
I don't know. Yeah. It depends how that works. Because, like, I bought this flashlight from China. It's a great flashlight. Oh, I misplaced it, so I still have to find it. But great flashlight, except that every time I turn it on, I have to cycle through all of its functions to get to the function I want. So, and like every time I turn on, it starts at a different function. So I don't know what it's going to be next time, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's a little frustrating. So I wish there was some way of disabling that. The fancier lights do have that ability where you can adjust what pressing what button will do. But I don't have that much familiarity with those.
Mine automatically starts in high beam, then it goes to low beam, and that's it.
Yeah. See, mine, I have an Olight that I carry with me all the time.
Yeah. So
and
they're,
when you turn,
I've heard they're very good. That's the, if yes. I buy one, that's what I'm going to get.
Yeah. So mine, it comes with 3 brightness settings. I can't remember what the lowest one is, but I know the highest is 500 lumens and there's 3 settings. And whatever setting you leave it on, that's where it will come back on when you turn it back on. So I always leave it on the lowest setting. Because if I need it brighter, I can always make it brighter. But if I have it set to the 500, you know, and I'm trying to look at something an inch away from my face and it blasts on at 500 lumens, I won't be able to see anything for an hour.
True.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, you're right, though. How you control it is also very important. You want to make sure that's a good function. Size and weight, those are kind of self-explanatory, right? I mean, if you're just going to take this flashlight and put it at your bedside or put it in your pickup truck, then who cares how big and heavy it is, right? You're not carrying it. But if you're like me and you're going to carry it around with you every day, you're going to want something that is small and lightweight. So something to consider.
Yeah. Like
and a big part of that will also come from what battery it uses.
Yeah. So I was going to say mine uses 4.8s, I think. I don't remember. It's like a fatter version of a AA. So
a fatter version of, okay, yeah.
So you gotta,
yeah, mine uses, I think they're CR123s and it's short and fat, but it only needs one of them. So,
and I've got this like 5 or 6 D cell mag light that I've had for about 25 years. And when I first got it, it was the brightest flashlight you could get, and it's got to weigh 5 pounds. Nowadays, I can get something a quarter the size with triple the light output. So this just stays in my bedroom in case there's a power failure.
Yeah. Yes. We have one in our bedroom too, and it goes up to like 1,000 lumens. And you want to talk about bad setup for going through your lights? This one, it starts out low, and you have to go all the way up to 1,000 lumens, and then 1,000 lumen strobing, and then you press it one more time, and then it turns off.
I had one like
every
that.
Every time Sarah's like, oh, I forgot to grab something out of my pant pocket or something like that, and turned on the flashlight to do it, next thing you know, the room's having a dance party.
And that'll screw you at night, because I had one like that. It goes through high, low, and then strobe. And then if you do it too fast, you miss the cycle that you want. You got to go through the whole cycle again.
Yeah. Yep. Another consideration are like clips. Now, I've never actually used a clip to clip one onto like my pants or something. But what I have done is you can, depending on if you can flip your clip around, you can actually put it onto the brim of your hat and wear it like a headlamp if you don't have one on you. Have you ever tried doing that?
I have a small headlamp one, but it's only like five or six LEDs. And it's only good for on your baseball cap if you're fishing at night and you want to see your fishing lures and stuff. Anything after that, you don't really get that much illumination.
Isn't that illegal in Ontario?
No.
Okay.
Having having a light attached to your firearm while you're hunting is illegal.
Oh, fishing.
Really?
Fishing at night. Yeah. I thought you're not allowed to fish at night.
Oh, yeah. You can fish at night. People go ice fishing. People go, well, especially if they're pickerel fishing, they'll definitely go in the evening when it's 9 or 10 o'clock at night.
And is there anything illegal about hunting with a flashlight on, or is it just based on the hours?
No, you can't project any beam of light off your firearm.
At all?
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
It can't be attached to your firearm.
Hmm.
That's why
So if I get an M14, I put a flashlight on it, I can't hunt with it.
Tactically, no. You have to take the flashlight off. That's why you can't put lasers on them either. You can't project a beam of light hunting.
I didn't know that.
Because it tends to paralyze animals. Like you take a deer and a flashlight and you hit him in the eyes, it just freezes, right?
Well, yeah, I understand that concept, but I was also thinking also during hunting season, you can't hunt until, half an hour before sunrise and half an hour after sunset. It's pretty light out when those times hit.
It's also not a good idea to have a flashlight attached to a firearm, because when you're using the flashlight, you're actually pointing the firearm at anything too. So I can understand the reasoning, but first of all, for game, because it's not fair to the game, especially if you hypnotize it with a light, which is what you do. And then from the safety aspect.
Unsporting.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't consider that, the safety aspect of it. Because you know that there's some idiot out there who's going to, instead of using their flashlight, going to use just their weapon-mounted light to walk around the bush with. And what was that noise over there?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Bob over in the bush. Well, now Bob's laying down.
Oh, Bob.
Poor Bob.
Yep. So like we were talking about the button, sometimes that can be a factor, whether how clicky it is. And that makes sense to me. It makes sense to you what that means?
Yeah.
How clicky a button is.
And the location of the button too, because I've got some that have the tab and the button and the base. So you've actually either turn it on with your weak hand, or you've got to re-manipulate it and flip it in your hand and use your thumb. So it's nice having, if you've got the flashlight in your hand, it's nice to have the selector in the side of the body. So you're not changing your grip, and it's easier to do with gloves on too.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the one I carry, well, actually, I'd say this, to me, it's more important that the battery or that the button is protected.
Yes.
Because the worst thing that can happen is you pull your flashlight out of your pocket and it's dead because it's been on in your pocket all day long.
I've done that. I look in my pocket to get my cigarettes and there's a light show going on in my pocket. Oh, flashlight came on.
Yeah. So I think to me, that's pretty important.
It's like a training thing. Some people like having the flashlight in that orientation. And so when they flick it on, they just use their thumb because that's how they hold their flashlight. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That would be a matter of how you practice with it and how you plan on using it, right?
Yep.
Which would lead us to the next topic of durability. What do you want in a flashlight? Do you want something that's impact resistant, water resistant, submersive? Do you want it made of aluminum? Do you want it made of some type of polymer?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'd say the water, the submersion, definitely, if you're planning on taking it on a boat, fishing, swimming, that kind of thing. Water resistant, I'd say just more if you're just using it outside.
Well, submersion's good for people like me who actually drop their flashlights in the bottom of the lake, and that way you can at least see it to retrieve it.
I thought you were going to say you dropped it somewhere else.
We're not going there, Benny.
A different body of water. For when it doesn't hit water and it hits the concrete, it's always good if it still works. So impact resistance pretty... Because I'm actually pretty bad. I drop everything on the floor. So impact resistance pretty important, too. You want to make sure that's going to be able to survive a drop on a rock or something like that.
Yeah, I've had a couple of aluminum ones. They've got the sharpened bezel, almost like a striking tool, like you'd say. And the only problem is that the ends tend to be really, really thin compared to the body. And you drop it, you end up doing a lot of damage to the striking areas.
Yeah. Well, since you brought it up, that's something else that if you plan on using this as a striking implement, then you might want those striking bevels in it as well. I don't plan on using my flashlight as a striking tool. Not unless I'm using Sarah's 10-pound baseball bat flashlight, but...
Yeah, I got this. I have this little one. It's got the sharpened edges on the bezel, and it's got this strobe thing. So if you're going to use it as a striking implement, you've got to cycle all the way through the third one. So by the time you get there, the guy's going to know where you are and what you're doing. And you're supposed to strike somebody in the face with this thing? Well, baseball bat works better.
Yeah. To me, that's like beating someone with your scope on your rifle. You're supposed to be looking through it to see your attacker. How are you using it to hit them at the same time?
Because you just you ever see the 80 movies with the cops with the giant flashlights? They just swing the whole thing forward.
But that's like butt stroking them with that's like Sarah's baseball bat flashlight.
Yeah,
where the thing is so big and heavy. Yeah, you could use it as like a beating stick, but. Generally the ones that come with the quote unquote striking tools on them are really just like a bevel so that if you hit someone, it'll keep the lens safe from breaking.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Do you have anything else you want to add on to that?
No, I'm not very well versed in flashlights, sadly.
No, I'm not a big flashlight aficionado, but I mean, I do appreciate a good flashlight.
Yeah.
And people who say, it's just like the knife, people who say that, like, why do you carry a flashlight with you all the time? Do it for a week. You'll find how useful it is.
Yeah. I carry a knife with me every day, and I use it for everything except for food.
Really?
Yeah, just because the food is, like, I don't know what touched those boxes after I've cut them.
Yeah. I understand that part.
I'm too lazy to clean my knife. It sits in my pocket the whole day.
Yeah. See, I used to clean my knife all the time, but that was because I used to, when I would take an apple to work, I'd use my knife to cut out the bad spots.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to use it for food.
I had a buddy who used to do that.
Yeah.
I clean my knife every week. I take a Q-tip to it. I get rid of all the pocket lint and the dust. So that way the auto assist works.
My auto assist works, and I haven't taken apart my knife to clean it in probably over a year.
Well, I've never taken it apart, but I always lubricate it, and I just take a Q-tip inside and get rid of all the crap and stuff, or I'll blast it with some aerosol air. I've never actually disassembled the whole knife.
No? I figured you being the knife snob, you would have.
Well, my bucks I can't disassemble because they're all brass and press-fitted, and I've never needed to.
No. I've done it, but it's also been I had a good reason for it. I can't remember what it was now, why I did it one time.
The only time I take apart my knives is to fix them.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it actually breaks.
My most expensive knife. Oh, no, I have a fixed blade that I have that I think is more expensive. But my most expensive knife is my Gerber Paraframe that was $20 at Canadian Tire because it was on sale.
Well, I had one of those. I lost it.
I lost mine too, and then I picked up another one because they went on sale again.
And you bought one for MD too, didn't you?
I did.
I found that knife to be kind of ironic because it's heavier than the knife I carry now, but yet it's like a skeletonized frame, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I found that kind of ironic.
Yeah, I've got a small Buck Vantage, and it's heavier than my big Gerber Swagger, because the Gerber doesn't have steel inserts, but the Buck does. So even though the Buck is smaller, it's actually heavier than the Gerber.
Yeah. That's actually made me think of one other thing that's a good, useful feature on your flashlight. A magnet built into it. Mine had a magnet on the back of it, which makes it great for if you need to just stick it to something while you're working. You need both hands. Turns it into like a little work light. As long as you don't leave it inside the hood of your car.
Oh, I want to hear that story.
I did that, and then I can't remember where we went. We went away for like a weekend or... Where were we going? Oh, no, I went to Manitoba. Right before we left, I was putting more windshield fluid into Sarah's car. And I'm like, well, I might as well put it in my car too. And I used, and it was like 4 a.m. or something. So I used the flashlight, did that. And then it wasn't until we got to Manitoba, but I'm like, where's my flashlight? Couldn't find it. I'm like, I know exactly where it is. Went home and it was still stuck onto the hood of the car. Dead, of course. But I left it on the whole time.
I've got one of those actually that I keep in the car when I was working. So it's got the magnetic base, it's got a beam, and it's also got sidebars. So I would actually just hook it up and I could have LEDs at the top, or if I wanted the main beam. And it was actually Terry's brother and sister owned an automotive shop, and it was one of their promo things one time. And I think they gave it to Terry 5 years ago, and this thing's still going. It's a great little flashlight.
That's good.
It's just something like that's handy to have with a magnetic surface, because it's only for close-up work and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like to have something around the 300 to 500 aluminum, because a lot of times, you know, you're not supposed to let the dog off the leash in the park. My main concern is skunks. So before at night, I light up the trail, and before we go in the field, I put it on high beam, and I just scan that whole field make sure I don't see these little eyeballs sticking up. And if I don't see any critters or any people, then I'll let them off. So it's nice to have a 300 to 500 setting in your pocket. And the batteries will last a couple of weeks of walking every night.
Yeah, it's good to have a durable, like a long-lasting battery.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the higher power setting, the faster it's going to burn out.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on flashlight, Thomas?
Get one. Keep one in your range bag.
Yeah.
I find especially what I would do, because my work bag and my range bag are black. And if there's any kind of dim light, I can't see anything in my knapsack where I can't. So I have a little tiny mag light that I keep in my bag just so I can see inside my bag.
But how do you see it inside your bag?
It's got a little clip that goes in the outside pocket. So if I can't see in there and I know I'm looking for something really small, I put the flashlight so I can see inside the black bag.
Yeah. And flashlights are so cheap these days. Buy a bunch of them. Put one in every car. You'll be thankful when you find out that your flashlight's dead or something like that, and you're trying to change a tire in the dark on the side of the road. So,
and like I said, Costco a lot of times have those deals where you get, you know, 3 Duracell 300 aluminum batteries, flashlights with batteries for $20. You know, something that's a great Christmas present, stocking stuffer.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to look for that next time I'm there. All right. Well, let's move on to events. Thomas, why don't you take event number one?
Event one is the Niagara Region Chapter Delta Waterfowl Dinner, which will be held on Friday, December 1st at the Antipasto da Roma at 87 Hanover Drive, St. Catharines, Ontario. Doors open at 5:30. Dinner starts at 7. Tickets are $50 a plate. Casual ammo attire is encouraged. You can contact Greg Sarkisian, if I pronounce that right, because I can't see this very well with my glasses, at 905-328-1730 or greg.sarkisian@gmail.com to purchase tickets. And I'll be there.
All right. And Benny, event number two?
Event number two, new CSSA gun draw, the Czech Small Arms VZ-58. All you have to do is make a $20 donation to the CSSA, and they will give you a free chance to win this gun. Better yet, they'll give you 3 chances with $50 donation, and a $100 donation will get you 10 chances. Rifle will find a new home December 1st, 2017, just in time for Christmas. Please send your donations. Please send your donations online at CSSA-CILA.org.
Sorry, I was editing that as you were reading it. So
trying to screw him up on the move, are you? I noticed that.
That's fine.
I tried to fix it, but he got to the point where he started reading it. I'm like, I'll just leave it and hopefully he figured it out.
He, realized, He's verbally challenged as it is, and you just make it more difficult for the poor boy.
Oh, I got to that point. I'm like, oh, okay, something's not right here, but I'll just try it anyways.
Anyway, so event number three is the 2018 Gunny Girl calendar. This year's calendar highlights and promotes some of the amazing CCFR women with beautiful, tasteful, and stunning photos of them and their favorite firearms. The funds raised for this project will be used to financially support the women's program. Each calendar comes with a registration number for a prize giveaways. Quantities are limited. A laminated version is being especially made for Trevor Furlott in case somebody spills water on his calendar again.
That's the reason? I thought it was something else.
Well, it depends on which room he keeps it
in. Oh, Benny went there.
Wait, where? I don't know what you're talking about.
apparently, Kelly's actually got Yolanda to autograph it. So that was his favorite Gunny Girl last year, as I recall.
Yeah.
And isn't Gavin's fiance on that too as well, Angela? Is that Gavin's fiance?
Fiance, girlfriend. I'm not sure, but yes.
His special lady.
His significant other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the actual calendar, but I've seen some of the pre-shots of them, and there's some pretty girls, so not like my wife will let me order them. But this is actually designed for the women to raise money for the women, so it's not...
It's classy.
It is classy.
It's not meant to be... it's the kind of thing you could hang in your kitchen and no one would think twice about it.
Okay, now Benny, would MD let you hang that in the kitchen?
I think so, maybe. I wouldn't have the rabbi over.
No. I've got a kitten calendar in my kitchen. It's kittens. I could hang it in my bedroom, but I couldn't hang it up. Especially if the rabbi was coming over.
All right, Benny, why don't you read email one
from James. Hi, James. Sorry. Hi, guys. I passed my concealed carry in Michigan a few years ago with an American relative just for the fun of it. I can't be licensed because I'm not a resident yet. Benny, you're right looking for a short grip version of a reliable pistol. In Canada, a NORC MP34 is the same barrel length as an MP22, but the grip is shorter and can use MP34 mags. However, you can't take your Norinco into the U.S. since they're banned. So Glock 19 instead of Glock 17, and use the longer 17 magazines. It works. Then practice because their concealed carry courses are our pal, but you have to shoot a target at 10 yards. Oh, and if you are carrying in your pocket, use a pocket holster. It reduces the amount of cleaning lint and crud out of your gun. Inside the waistband at 2 to 4, or appendix, maybe kidney, 1 to 2 mag spare. Weight matters. Keep it up. Love the show. James.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, James.
He makes a good point. The Norincos are a no-go going south of the border, so I'd have to find something else.
Yeah. And he did have a good point. If I were to carry a pocket gun, it would definitely be in a pocket holster.
Yeah, you don't want to knock that trigger by accident.
Yeah. Well, you want to protect it just in case. I don't know.
So James, get your concealed carry license from New Hampshire, and you can't carry in Michigan yet, although I think they've recently changing their policy on that, so you might be able to soon.
I remember is that for Michigan, they actually have a gun registry for pistols. The gun has to be registered with the state of Michigan.
Oh, really?
Yeah. See, so, I never used to be, because we used to go to PPC matches down there, and that's relatively new, because we looked at open carry when we were down there for the apple seed, and that was the thing, is that they had the gun registry. So
I think I was reading an Ammo Land or one of those email gun magazine, daily gun article things, that Michigan is on the way of making going constitutional carry, so keep an eye out on that.
That would be good for our friends in Michigan.
It would be.
And then James emailed me, Mike, I understand why you would want a 308 if you live in Northern Ontario, but down here in Southern Ontario, we can't hunt with anything over 270. A 6.5 Creedmoor short actions open up a lot of flexibility. Again, regional law sucks. So I actually asked him back. I asked him where he found that in the Ontario hunting regulations, because I couldn't find anything besides the no rimfire. And so where did he find this? Would you put something in here, Thomas?
What's in the small game? You can't hunt small game. Anything with a small game license under 277 in Southern Ontario. You have to believe, south of the Nattawa River.
Yeah.
You can use anything over 270, but not on a small game license.
That's actually not true. So I've got the right. He actually sent me an email back, and he found it on page 79 of the small games regulations. He sent me an email. Please see page 79 of the regs. It is a small game firearm regulation. So his WMU down here are all shotgun and or black powder and bow for deer. So it's not necessarily for anything larger unless going north. So you have to check your WMU. So I checked my WMU, and it says right here on page 79, a person hunting small game may not carry or use a rifle of greater caliber than 275 caliber rifle, except a muzzle-loading gun.
Yeah.
In the geographic areas of Brant, Chatham, Kent, Durham, Elgin, Essex, Halton, Hamilton, Huron, Lambton, Middlesex, Niagara, Norfolk, Northumberland, Oxford, Peel, Perth, Toronto, Waterloo, Wellington, or York.
Yeah, see, that was my thing, is I would be hunting in Northumberland. That's why I looked at it that way.
Yeah, so pretty much once you get north of, I think, what, Northumberland goes up to about Lindsay? I think that's about...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost to Peterborough.
So once you get north of Lindsay, if you're out near like Barrie, things like that, I think a lot of that area, and including Eastern Ontario, the only one I had to watch out for was Perth. That's nearby, but I'm not in Perth, so yeah, I can hunt with something larger.
That's why you got to really study the regs, because each wildlife management unit will have different regs, and they can, you know, just and sometimes the boundaries are road or a stream. Like at Kathy's place, for example, I could hunt on Sunday on her neighbor's property. Last time I was out there, I couldn't hunt on Kathy's property on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Now, that could have changed by then, but little things like that, you really got to watch out on the regs.
And some of these, I don't even really understand why they're in there. Because some of these, like Perth is a town. So I would assume that the town of Perth probably had its own hunting laws that said you can't hunt within their limits anyway. So I don't understand why they're in there. Or like Toronto.
Yeah, well, you can't hunt in Toronto.
Who's hunting in Toronto? Like, you just can't, you can't hunt in Toronto because it's a city.
But I wanna.
And they have their own. You may wanna, but they won't let you.
Well, 20 years ago, there were places you could actually hunt in Toronto. Like, until they made the Rouge Valley a park. When I was a kid, the Rouge Valley was all cottages before the zoo was there. So there were places you could actually hunt. So.
Yeah, but if that was 20 years ago, then.
Or 30 years, more longer than that. Probably longer than that.
Maybe it's time they update their regulations.
What? No, Mike. That would make sense.
We can't expect the government to make sense, Michael.
Although it actually would make sense if they said that would just be a waste of money. We might as well just leave them the way they are, because it's moot at this point.
Yeah. For the amount of ink that it's costing them to print that one paragraph, I think they don't care that much.
Yeah, it's okay.
But yeah. Yeah, so that's a good point. Make sure you know what you're looking at, because I would have been really ticked off if I had bought a 308 and then found out I couldn't even use it. But if you have any feedback, questions, or comments, feel free to email them to us at host@newshootercanada.ca or send them to our Facebook page or the comment section on our website at newshootercanada.ca.
So you're getting a 6.5 Creedmoor, Mike?
No, I'm getting an M14 or M305 because I'm too cheap to pay for an M14.
Nice.
And Mr. Uzi sent me a link to an M14 that someone had up for sale. Gunsmith had up for sale for a Black Friday sale.
For how much?
I think it was $600. I think it was $599.
That's not.
It wasn't a bad price, but I mean, I'm sure you could find that used tax free on CGN if you're patient.
I've never actually looked at them because they're so damn heavy. I don't want to be carrying one around the bush all the time.
Lift some weight, Thomas.
They're too damn heavy. I'm not carrying one in the bush all the time. That's why I buy a little ultralight Savage Axis in 270.
Get a sling. It's not like you have to bench press this thing. It's not like you're in the military and you have to run with the rifle like and held over your head.
Have you actually shot one before?
No.
I shot one once.
But they're heavy. I can say if I was in a stand all day, fine. But if I had to, no.
What a heavy, Benny?
I don't remember. I just remember thinking, man, I got to practice with these sights. I have no idea where this thing's hitting.
Hey, we got a new iTunes review. Woo-hoo. This is from What Your Beef. And it's titled, I Like It, 5 stars. It's nice to have a Canadian gun podcast. I like hearing what's new in the news every week and hearing about Canadian-made products. Keep it up. So thank you very much, What Your Beef.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Facebook likes, we're at 1,263.
And we owe the increased likes to Matt at Our Arms and the contest, because a lot of people have been entering the contest. So we're still waiting for Mike to get the video up, seeing how fast he can dump 30 rounds downrange. Did you see the Patriot podcast? They got their times up.
Oh, I saw the original video. I didn't see them doing their getting their times up.
I commented on it and said don't, and then they updated it and put the times on it.
Oh, okay.
It's gonna be tough to beat. Never mind the production level they put through on the video, but the times.
Yeah, that's more about my thing. Now I'm more just gonna be embarrassed about the video quality that I have. I don't have the production crew that they do.
Well, you know,
the editing skills.
When Terry asked me what I wanted for Christmas, after seeing that, I figured, you know, I should get a video camera because I did do a lot of video photography years and years ago. And I figured I could do that. Then I figured, what the heck? I want a gun instead. Let Mike do it.
Why not get it? You had it basically paid for. Go to SHOT Show, Thomas. What's up with that?
That's a very good
the
point,
the whole time,
buddy.
I'm like, you're talking about getting a about selling a gun so you can go to shop. You bought another gun.
Well, technically, it went on Terry's credit card because it's my annual present. The problem with going to SHOT Show is that first of all, I have to get an attendant for Terry for 3 days, which I haven't budgeted for. Okay, and then even if Dave springs for the trip and the flight, I still have to need 4 days worth of food and provisions and everything else.
Walmart has ramen noodles for like $2.69 for 12.
No, I'll just save for it and then I'll go next year and that way I can have a good time, not worry about counting pennies when I'm on holidays. And Terry wants to go.
Oh, okay.
That's the main thing. She wants to go. Damn.
That's only one ticket. Never mind. I'm going to shut up now.
Hey, Benny, MD could want to go. You never know.
Oh, I offered her.
She'd want to go?
Nah. Because it wouldn't... It...
What a good husband.
Yeah.
So, Benny, who would you like to shout out to this week?
MD, thanks for letting me come on the show. Go to SHOT Show. Run my business. Make a lot of noise while Dev's trying to go to sleep.
Thomas, how about you?
Terry, thank you for buying me another gun for Christmas. I'm just trying to figure out what else I'm going to get to fill my stocking. I get to do my own. That's a good thing about marriage for 30 years and having no kids. You get to pick out your own
shotgun shells.
No.
Shotgun shells.
The pins. The stainless steel pins. That's what I've been looking for.
Oh, there you go. There you go. She will literally open up the bag and just fill up your stocking with pins.
Oh, she would.
You get to pick them all out.
Well, no, because she knows the mess because I was cleaning my stuff in the sink. And those little tiny pins are so tiny. I've lost 8 or 9 of them down the drain. It's like, no, they're not mine.
That's okay. I went to Dollarama. I got a very large sieve, and that's what I use because the pins don't go through that.
Yeah,
and I can still rinse my brass okay, although I really need to get one of those the case media separators next year.
Yeah, your sieve, is it metal or is it plastic?
Metal.
Okay, see, mine's metal too. I wish I had a plastic one, because then afterwards when you're trying to get them back out with a magnet, if it was plastic it wouldn't stick to it.
Right.
But when it's metal, it tries to stick to everything.
Well, Terry does have a really fine, fine plastic sieve. I got in a lot of trouble for using it. She took it and hid it away, so. She doesn't like me using her cooking stuff for gun stuff for some reason. I don't know.
No.
She took the colander off me too, and I used to use it to separate the media. She didn't like the fact that I was using her pasta colander to separate my brass and corn cob. So that disappeared too. So,
well, that's how I got a mixing bowl to use for stuff. I used it once for cleaning my SKS, and I got myself a free mixing bowl.
Well, she already gave me the first one. When I tried to go for the second one, she got ticked.
I just go to Dollarama and pick up something for, now it's gotten more expensive, $4. But, I don't really have that issue.
See, that's a smart thing. In hindsight, I realized I should have done it, but I was too anxious. So,
yeah.
So shout out to all our wives for letting us use their cooking utensils to process our brass.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and my shout out this week is to James for all the great hunting information. It was really good talking to him, and I'm glad I got all that information, and I'm glad that I am like 100% certain now that a 308 is acceptable for my area.
Well, we appreciate the writers.
Listeners.
The listeners. No, I used to work for transit.
The ghost writers we have for the show
notes? I used
to work
for transit companies. We call them our writers. No, but we appreciate all of the listeners that contact us. Like, as I was saying, I've been speaking to Aaron. I've been speaking to, I just blanked on his name. I can't believe that.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure there's an M in there, so I thought I'd start with an
M. No, it's
down.
Robert. No, it's Aaron and Robert. I don't know why I blanked on Robert's name. I talked to him at least two or three times a day. And then the new guy, Jeff. So, you know, we're all approachable on Facebook. If you want to send us a friend request, talk to us, ask us questions, by all means, we're all more than approachable. Except George. Yep. He's just too busy.
Yeah.
And we'll give you an answer. Probably won't be the right one, but we'll give you an answer.
If not, we'll find out somebody that does have the answer. We'll either contact the Reloading Podcast or our geek friends. They'll know for sure.
Yep.
We're your gateway to the world of gun podcasting.
We're our gateway. Great, Benny. Let's end it off on that. Thomas, take us out of here.
Their gateway.
Yeah. Until next week, keep your barrels downrange and smoking. Take your kid shooting.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
It's not about the odds, it's about the stakes.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
A lack of availability for it.
La di da di da.